D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Finnegan, and David Janes here with you. Predators versus Canucks coming up at 7 o'clock. And to help us break that down, plus the entire landscape of the NHL, we welcome in Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, on D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick. And Elliot, actually, before we get to the hockey talk, I need a report on the buzz in Toronto as the Blue Jays prepare to open the World Series against the Dodgers.
Well, I'll say this, Adam. Like, I've gone to two playoff games. The atmosphere was electric at both of them. We have broadcasts on Friday and Saturday. The Sabres and the Leafs are playing a back-to-back. We had the Leafs move the game on Saturday early. They're dropping it to a puck at 5 o'clock instead of the regular 7. And we are joking that we could go on air and say the most ridiculous things, like the Maple Leafs have all traveled to Venus and will not be able to be at the game tonight, and no one is going to care.
I will say this, Elliot. I did get a little worried for the Blue Jays when I saw Vladimir Guerrero Jr. arriving for Game 7 in an Austin Matthews jersey, considering the Maple Leafs' history with Game 7s. But it worked out.
Yeah, it was. It did, you know, if the Maple Leafs go anywhere, people are going to credit Guerrero for breaking the curse, right? Because I'll tell you this, Adam, the whole country had the same reaction that you did when they saw the pictures. Like, if you saw the replies, it was like, why? The different group chats I had with friends and coworkers were like, is this guy nuts? Like, that's the jersey he would wear? But Guerrero is on such a roll right now and is such a stud that ancient curses cannot stop him.
That is true.
That is very true. So, Elliot, the Anaheim Ducks were here a couple of nights ago, and Ross Johnston, of all people, had a three-point night. By the way, Willie Donick with an expert announcer jinx before
Elliot.
Ross Johnston scored.
I mean, four seconds before he scored the goal at the beginning of the game, I said something like, not much skill on this line. And sure enough,
my God.
Boom. I mean,
that's hilarious, man.
Yes. And it was noted by some fans.
Yes,
it was
and me. I made sure to point it out as well.
I had to wear it. I had to wear it, as they say.
You know, I'll say this about Ross Johnston. Like, he is a really popular teammate. On the island, when they had to let him go and he got claimed on waivers by the Ducks, there were a lot of people there in the organization that were really sore to see him go. So I have no doubt that there were a lot of people inside the game who know him who were thrilled for him in that night.
The reason I bring up Ross Johnston, Elliot, is he had 3 points in 8 minutes and 53 seconds of ice time against the Predators on Tuesday.
Yeah.
That's more points than Steven Stamkos has all season for the Nashville Predators. And Willie and I talked about this yesterday, and I want your opinion on this as well. I'm starting to get a little concerned about Steven Stamkos. I feel like I'm not noticing him on the ice much. There are limitations, of course, with the level of talent on the team versus the level of talent on his previous team. That's something that we noted when the Predators signed him last summer. But I'm starting to get a little concerned that Steven Stamkos may have lost a little bit of that touch. And watching Stamkos, have you noticed anything similar?
You know, I knew, Adam, that this was going to be a topic. And for a rare occasion, I actually decided to do some research. I was like, I better actually do research into this. And I understand your concern, and I'll tell you that I share it. Now, I am a big Stamkos truther. I am a big fan of his, personally and professionally. He is a proud, proud guy, and a lot of lesser men would have quit and not gotten to where he got with some of the injuries he faced. I'm concerned, too. I think the thing I'm most concerned about is that he's not making an impact on the power play. You know, 5-on-5, yeah, you want it to be more, always, but Stamkos' bread and butter was always the power play. He'd be in his spot, he has that wicked shot, and he could change a game with one blast. And, you know, I don't think you can solely blame it on, you know, the Predators can't get it to him, although that's an issue. I'm shocked at how lack of an effect he's having on games on the power play. That is the thing that stands out to me, Adam, is I figured even if it didn't work so well at 5-on-5, the power play would make everything else worthwhile. And it's not doing that.
Part of me wonders, Elliot, I know it was incredibly difficult for Steven Stamkos to leave Tampa.
You can't say that anymore. It's been a year.
Okay.
Adam, I really believe that. Like, hey, it was tough. It was jarring. It was like even Julien Brisebois, the GM of the Lightning, who I think is ice cold, was rattled making that decision because he knew how big it was. But you know what, Adam? Like, we're all pros or aspire to be in what we do, right? There's a point where you've got to close the door. You've got to move on. Life happens. Everybody understands that. We've all been transferred from a job. We've all been moved on from a job. Life happens. You can't mope forever. You have to adjust. And I think deep down, maybe not even deep down, I think maybe the Stamkos I know would not accept that as an excuse at this point either.
Where I was going with that, Elliot, is Steven Stamkos, that's okay. Steven Stamkos had to uproot his life and move to Nashville. I agree with you. It's past time for him to have the hard feelings about what happened in Tampa. But here is something I have started to wonder, just within my own mind. If Steven Stamkos sees how this Predators season is going, how this team is trending, could you see a world where Steven Stamkos approaches Barry Trotz about waiving his no-movement clause and joining a contender where perhaps he can get back to being the Steven Stamkos we know he can be?
Boy, you're trying to get me.
I'm not trying to radio you, I promise.
Like 3 weeks of this season.
I'm not trying to radio you, I promise.
That's what I'm here for. Okay, let me just say this clearly and carefully. Okay, if this continues the way it's going, okay, I could see a situation where both sides sit down and talk and say, what are our options here? How's that?
That works for me. I do not want to radio you. I know how difficult that can be.
I don't, honestly, Adam, like if it doesn't get better, could you not see a situation where it is beneficial to both team and player to explore it?
I could see that, yes.
Yeah, not next week.
Yes, but not next week.
But down the road somewhere, could it get to that? Yeah, without question. Without question. I think there's more there. I think there's more there than he's shown. Let's see how it works. Now let's flip. Elliot, you know, with Vancouver in town, you guys are always on top of it, the storylines. What have you made from them? And looking at some of their numbers, they have done a very good job staying afloat, even though the analytics don't look very good for them. So it looks to me like Thatcher Demko and Kevin Lankinen have played very well for them.
They've got kind of the same issue that you guys do. They've got a bit of a hole in the middle. Now, they've got Pettersson, who when he's going is a really good center. But now, especially with the injuries suffered this week by Philip Hedl, they're really thin down the middle. And it got exposed the other night. Pittsburgh gave them a lot of trouble. So, like, they have an elite player in Hughes. He's a star of stars. He'll be at the Olympics this year. Pettersson, after a really slow start, has started to get going. I agree. I agree that their goaltending has been very good. But, you know, that is a team that, like you guys, spent all summer looking for centers, an impact center, and they are hard to find. You know, it's just amazing. You think 2 years ago, these two teams were in a brutally tough, entertaining first-round series. And I don't think anybody would have imagined that this is where they'd be 2 years later.
It's a great point. And that leads me to the next question about the Canucks is, in that series, when you get a real close look at a player for a couple weeks, you maybe appreciate him on a higher level. Quinn Hughes just means so much to the team. And I've heard your podcast on 32 Thoughts talk about, you've had interviews with him directly about the future there. So what's the temperature at this point? He's so essential to their success with what he does with the puck. And I know everybody in Vancouver's kind of hinging on, is he going to make the long-term commitment to that team?
It's sort of like the, I was joking about with a buddy that the interview with Hughes that we did this year at the media tour in September was like you ask someone to the prom and their answer is maybe, and you're sitting there going, this might not end very well for me. Look, like, one thing Hughes said at the beginning was, I want to see how we start. They're what, 4-3? Could be worse. I think this year is going to tell everything. If Vancouver has a bad year, I think they could be looking for somebody else to go to the prom with them. If they have a really good year, I think it increases their chances. But he laid it out there. Like, you can't accuse the guy of sugarcoating it. He came right out and said, we better have a good year.
Elliot, I want to follow up on Elias Pettersson. The talk after the game in Pittsburgh on Tuesday was deployment for Elias Pettersson. And I had an opportunity to ask Adam Foote about this earlier today, and he came prepared.
Yeah. Oh, so you were the guy who was all over the
all over
the internet today.
Yes, all over the internet. That was me, apparently. But Adam Foote came prepared. You'll appreciate this, Elliot. Your colleague, Dan Murphy, is here. And Adam Foote was taking a little bit longer to leave the coach's room before his news conference. And Dan said to me, he's being prepped to answer this question. And he, I will give Adam Foote credit. He went in depth quite a bit on how he's using Elias Pettersson specifically on Tuesday, but also in general. But that player is under such a constant state of pressure. Yeah. What have you seen from Pettersson? Because a lot of the Canucks' success hinges on his performance, especially with Hedel out, Bluger's injured, that center depth is a mess.
Oh, it's the pressure is enormous. You know what I like, and I think a lot of people, I think sometimes guys like Pettersson, like Matt Sundin, when he played in Toronto, sometimes I always felt that he wasn't Mark Messier. He wasn't screaming in people's faces. He didn't have the super intense eyes. And I think at times, you know, you confuse that with like a lack of effort. But the one thing that I really think about Pettersson is, whether he scores or he doesn't, Adam, you want to see someone impose their will on the ice. Like, one thing I think about Ryan O'Reilly is, whether he's scoring or not, you notice him. Like, he's winning a puck battle, or he's doing something really intelligent. Like, he's the kind of guy who can have no points, and you want Pettersson to have points because he's a scorer, but you see ways that he impacts the game, right? Sometimes I want to see more of that from Pettersson. Like, the other night, they won a game where he blocked two shots at the end of the game on the last shift. They were two of the ugliest shot blocks in history, but it didn't matter. He threw his body right in front of them. And that's what he can do. Like, just make an impact on the game. And if he does that, everybody will be happy.
Elliot, we saw Jonathan Toews for the first time live Saturday in Winnipeg. It coincided with your interview with him, which was good. And it brought back a lot of memories for Predator fans with all those battles, three specifically in the playoffs in the first round. Taves never got the boos like Patrick Kane did, but still, you think of those teams, he is one of the top two or three names that come to mind in that rivalry. So he looked pretty good to me on Saturday. But they've got – are they pretty happy with how he looks right now for what they thought they were going to get?
I'm actually pleasantly surprised, Willie. Actually, one of my buddies joked about that interview. He said, Taze looked good, the shot looked good, you look hideous. That's what he said to me. But, no, you know what? I think everyone's been pleasantly surprised. Like, when I saw him that day – if you'll remember, I don't know if you remember what he looked like when he last played in Chicago, but with everything that was bothering him physically and mentally, he'd gotten heavy. Like, he didn't look like himself. When I saw him, and we did that interview the day before the regular season started, like, he looked strong and his legs looked massive. Like, he looked really physically powerful. But, like, I really wanted to set a low bar, Willie. Like, he'd been gone for 910 days. I didn't expect a lot, and he's exceeded my expectations. He scored in the game after the one you're mentioning, but like for me, he's been better than I thought he was going to be. And they've got a lot of injuries, and I think they're 5-1. He's a big part of that, real big part of that.
There was another really good article that caught my attention on the Canucks, but I think it also relates to the Predators. And a theme that you hit on early in this interview about how hard it is to find centers for some teams. Thomas Drantz from The Athletic went through a long laundry list of things that Vancouver looked at or tried unsuccessfully to upgrade its center. And I have to believe, with what Barry Trotz has said publicly, that he probably looked at some of these same options and couldn't find one. The Predators have a lot of prospects around the same age, and you're looking ahead 2 or 3 years. I don't know if all of them are going to hit, but he's got some things to trade, and he clearly has some question marks at center. But maybe you can help illustrate to people here how many teams are looking for centers like the Canucks and the Predators are.
I think the bigger question is who isn't. they're really hard to find. They are really hard to find. And, you know, like, When Barry Trotz tells you he's looking for a center and he's been doing it for a year, it hasn't happened not because lack of trying. It hasn't happened because I bet at best he thinks he's making a lateral move, or at worst he thinks he's giving up something that's too much for what he thinks can really help him, or there are just not a lot of them available. Like, one of the guys who I think some teams are looking at right now, especially with the way San Jose started, is Wennberg. And I just think that the Sharks are probably in a position here. They don't have to rush into anything. There's no pressure on them. And, like, one of the things is that they can probably wait and be patient. And I'm sure some of the – and he has some control over it, too. But I think that that's the thing right now, Willie, is that there's more teams looking than there are reasonable solutions to your problem. I think Barry could have probably acquired some guys who would have said, hey, look, I made a move. But when it got down to it, were they really going to be a difference or what you needed? Yeah, I'm not convinced about that.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, has been our guest on The Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He joins us every Thursday during hockey season, and he is presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, great stuff as always. Enjoy the World Series. We'll catch up next week.
All right, Jason Six, for no sensible reason.
Hey, Elliot, you saw me jump on the bandwagon, right? I sent you the picture of my medicine hat, uniform, and baseball card from 1993. I'm just saying. First time they're in the series since 93. Could there be a connection?
There you go.
I expect this to be in 32
Willie,
thoughts.
Your buddy Caleb is becoming a big star up here, man.
He is a star, isn't he? He's done a great job. It was great. We were up there all week, and so I was communicating with him. He was doing the field. He's talking about Caleb Joseph. He grew up in Nashville, played high school ball here, played for the Orioles, and ended his career with Blue Jays. Now doing a lot of work for the Sportsnet World Series broadcast, so he's the man. He's the man. He just came back yesterday for a couple days.
He's becoming a big star. Big star.
Good for him.
Elliot, we'll talk next week.
Take care.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on what Elliot had to say about the Nashville Predators. We'll also get back into the Tennessee Titans coming up next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, The Game.
Yeah, the together part is the difficult part. And I actually talked to Amy Adams Strong before the game about it. 10 years ago, I was a part of the team that fired Ken Whisenhunt and Mike Mularkey took over. And the biggest thing with that is, and I would say when Mularkey took over, there were a lot of things, and I don't know if it's similar to Callahan, from being around the team a little bit, and you guys will have a better idea. It seemed like players liked Callahan, and they just weren't getting the wins. I would say when Whisenhunt was there in 2015, for a lot of us as players, like, you didn't think the way we were doing things were the right way, and we didn't agree with it. So I think when Mularkey took over at that point, it was like a fresh air. It was like guys were excited about what could become the team. So it was able to get going. Not like you're going to win a ton of games. We weren't a good football team at that moment. But I think that helped band guys together to want to go out there and perform better for Mularkey, but for ourselves, and prove that we were a better football team than so far what we had put forward. But I think the main thing, I was in Cleveland the year we went 0-16. The main thing is there's a realization that when the head coach gets fired and you only have one win at this point in the season, the one constant in the NFL is change. And that's even when I won a Super Bowl and you get to the next year after that, there's going to be change within the locker room. When you're losing, entire rosters are flipped over. So the thing that motivates guys the most is the fact that I want to make sure I'm still employed next year.
That was Jason McCourty, CBS Sports NFL analyst, former member of the Tennessee Titans, on our show yesterday. McCourty will be part of the broadcast team for Titans at Colts on Sunday afternoon. And I thought that response, Derek, from McCourty was interesting, because I am wondering how the Tennessee Titans players are going to keep things together over the course of the remainder of the season, because they still have, what, 10 more games to play?
Yep.
They're 1-6. The season is effectively over. They're not making the playoffs at 1-6. The trade deadline is in a couple of weeks. Players are going to be moved. Mm-hmm. But it's about keeping it together and still trying to play, even when you know that the wins are probably going to be hard to come by. And I wanted to ask for your experience with this situation, because you didn't play for too many bad teams in your NFL career. But one team you did point out to me was the 2007 Ravens. Those Ravens under Brian Billick went 5-11. That was Brian Billick's final season in Baltimore before John Harbaugh took over. And of course, John Harbaugh is still there. Your team started 4-3, then lost 8 consecutive games. 4-2. And lost 9 consecutive games. My bad. 4-2 to 4-11. And the team finished 5-11. So take us inside what that season was like for you and how you and your teammates tried to keep playing despite knowing that there wasn't too much on the field to play for at that point.
See, this, that's why, you know, two situations may look the same, but if you look up underneath the hood, they're totally different. When you're looking at Tennessee Titans of this year and you're looking at the Baltimore Ravens of that year, both teams look like they were bad teams. But if you sort of pull back the veil, you will see that Tennessee is still a bad team with a bad roster. Baltimore wasn't. We had a rash of injuries that decimated our team one by one by one. And so much so that we were playing with third-string guys. We were playing with guys that didn't anticipate playing at all, or not as much as they end up playing during that season. So to hold the locker room together was, I'm not going to say it was easy, but we still had all our leaders in there. It's not like, you know, people were traded away and this was happening, so you start to lose the leadership voice in the locker room. No, the leadership voice was still in the locker room, but it was because of the injuries that we occurred that season that we just couldn't overcome them. So staying together for us was different. We stayed together because we knew we were still a good team. We just had to overcome the rash of injuries that we were having. But we also knew that this could potentially be Billick's last season, too. So you look at the Titans situation. This is where I think the lack of leadership, if they would have continued with Brian, would have hurt this team. Because I think now, because I think under that circumstance, you don't have enough players. You don't have enough leaders to try to hold everybody together. Because now it's like now everybody seems to be fending for themselves. As much as Jeffrey Simmons talked about us staying together, them staying together as a team, he meant it. And that's what he wanted to happen or wants to happen. But the further you get into the season, guys start getting injured. The part that is difficult is not, you know, me wanting to go out there and play hard because I know this is the business. I know there are going to be a bunch of changes. And I don't want to be a part of the negative change, meaning I'm out of here. That's not it. You're going to play, but it's to get us to stay together. Don't point fingers. Just do your job. Let's stay connected together. Doing your job is the easy part. Staying connected is the hard part. That's what this team has to fight for, is that connection. McCoy talked about it. Staying together as a team. Knowing what our goals are moving forward. Keep paving, keep hitting the pavement. Keep concentrating and stacking days each and every day. That's how we stay together. Don't point fingers. That's how we understand where we're at as a franchise. We know. So there's no need. Nobody's coming to save us. Nobody's coming in here to rescue us. We know what situation we're in. It doesn't benefit us if we start to turn on one another. The people outside this locker room are going to say what they're going to say. Reporters are going to say what they're going to say. Journalists, radio heads, they're going to say what they're going to say. But as a team in this locker room, we got to understand we got to stay together. That's the critical part.
It's easy for me to say this because I'm not in the locker room, but I'm just imagining the Titans as they prepare to take on the Colts. The Colts look like a juggernaut. Mm-hmm. 6-1. Jonathan Taylor, as I said earlier, 3 games this season with 3 touchdowns. The Titans as a team have 6 touchdowns all season. Daniel Jones playing like Dan Marino reincarnated, although Dan Marino is still alive. But you know what I mean.
Yes.
Things are going well in Indianapolis. The Titans are going on the road. Calvin Ridley, I would assume, is not going to play. He did not practice again today. We know Jeffrey Simmons isn't going to play. We know Legarius Sneed is not going to play, although many people probably think that is a positive, not a negative. But it would be easy for me to look at the situation and go, how are the Titans going to possibly go there and believe that they can win this football game? They're 14.5-point underdogs for what that's worth. But this looks like such a mismatch on paper. And I know athletes are proud. They're going to go into that game thinking they can win. But let's all be honest. What are the chances they're going to win? So I admire their confidence. But I'm just not sure how they can realistically put themselves in the frame of mind that, hey, we're shorthanded. We're 1-6. Our rookie quarterback is struggling. Our best player is injured. But we're going to go give it a game because I have a feeling this game may end up like the last one.
It may end up that way. But that doesn't mean as a team you can't go out there and still fight. You never know what's going to happen. Listen, yeah, the Colts are predicted to win by 14 points. But what happens if you get a few turnovers, you play like you did in the first half of last game? What if that happens? And then now you're up. So you can never just walk in there thinking, oh, we're overmatched. I'm not going to give it my all. Every Sunday brings a new opportunity for you to win a football game. As bad as the Tennessee Titans are, they still got a Sunday to try to win a football team. Do we believe it's going to happen? It's a slim chance that it will. But if you go out there and you don't make mistakes like they did last game, when you have, you know, four or five plays that pretty much, you know, tip the scale the other way, if you go out there and don't make those mistakes, you give yourself an opportunity to win. If you go out there and you do that, you're a bad team. Bad teams can't overcome turnovers and mental errors. So they can't go out there like that. But this is going to be another test for them, going up against a really good team, and how, you know, because every game moving forward for the Tennessee Titans, there's going to be some type of adversity they're going to have to face, whether they're, because they're a bad team, so they're going to have to overcome something. How well do they overcome those bad moments or those bad plays? It's going to dictate whether they are blown out like they were a couple weeks last week, or if they're able to keep themselves in a game and try to make a remarkable comeback like they did against Arizona.
One texter says, at this point, we need to be putting pressure on the players to be playing for contracts next year if they're going to be around, because they probably don't want to stay here next year. They're telling their agents to get them out of here.
Well, whether you're telling your agent to get you out of here, you still got to put good play on film so somebody can say, you know what, I want that guy on my team. Because the one thing, and this is what I want fans to understand, whether you're winning or you're losing, but in this case they're losing, and you feel you are one of those fringe guys, or you're one of those guys that they're looking at, and you're second on the depth chart, or you're a veteran guy that may, the starter that they may look to go somewhere else, you're auditioning for other guys, for other teams. So if you want to go out there and have talent, me as a GM, I'm looking at that and say, y'all a bad team, but you ain't even giving 100%. You're giving like 30%. I don't want you on my team, because every good team can turn into a bad team for a few weeks. Does that mean you're going to give up on us if we turn into a bad team for 3 weeks, we lose three in a row or four in a row? If that is indeed, I don't want you on my team. So guys, think about this stuff. Like, I got to go out here and perform. Listen, we may not be a good team, but I don't want it to be because I'm not out there doing my job.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans, the Predators, whatever's on your mind. We're still accepting submissions for Willie Donick's College Game Day sign. He's not here at the desk. He's preparing for the broadcast, Predators and Canucks, coming up at 7 o'clock. But I will relay them to him. So if you have suggestions for Willie's College Game Day sign, 615-737-1025. Our show will be broadcasting live at the all-new Circus Sportsbook Kentucky in the Mint Gaming Hall this Monday. Prior to Monday Night Football, head up there and watch the Monday night game as the Commanders take on the Chiefs.
I want to see if y'all can repeat this play. And this is an easy one, too. YMO, let's just do this one. Let's go gun, deuce right closer, Z-top, fire 6J, rib, boom, F-ship, H-burst on the turn.
No chance.
I'll give you an easy one. This is a base game plan right here. This is a base game plan. Gun, gen, right, baffle, 2-jet, Costco, white, basic.
No chance. Yeah.
Come on, Paul. You got me sacked out there.
That was Cam Ward after practice yesterday having fun with reporters. Did you catch those play calls, Derek?
I didn't know what the first play was, but when he was saying it, I was thinking like, okay, Z is motioning, then they got another motion, and it was a lot of verbiage. But I know there were two motions in there, Z motioning, and then I think the H was going to motion.
I don't know how they remember all of that.
It's a lot to remember. That's why I say when you there's this misconception, it's been that way for a very long time, that these athletes aren't intelligent guys or girls. This stuff right here, you have to – the guys that can't pick it up, they're not in the league. They can't handle it. But the guys that are in the league, man, you have to know this stuff. And you're talking about knowing it in a split second. And you got to go out there and perform it. High pressure situations. Very high pressure.
So we will be live at Party Foul tomorrow at 2031 Broadway. So right where – Broadway meets West End as you're heading toward Vanderbilt. It's a brand new Party Foul. We will be there So we'll Chase and Big Joe. So we'll be there from noon to 6. We'll be giving away a pair of tickets to Missouri Vanderbilt on Saturday. You can come on out to the new Party Foul in Midtown again tomorrow from noon to 6. We'll also be taking your suggestions for Willie's College Game Day sign. My suggestion was Miz has no Riz, meaning Missouri, of course. Willie likes that one. I had to explain what Riz is, but he likes that one. But if you can come up with a better one, 615-737-1025. We'll also take your submissions tomorrow. You can come on out to Party Foul and make them in person. We can make some signs. 615-737-1025. Jeff on our text line wants to know why we didn't go down the rabbit hole on Steven Stamkos. I assume he means with Elliot Freeman. Jeff said, and I assume this is Stamkos, Stamkos said in his interview that they need to slow down the power play to get set up. Brunette immediately followed that with, slow it down, I don't know what that is. This is a huge philosophical mismatch that foreshadowed things are not going to improve. Given how the entire team is trending, Brunette's seat got a little hotter because there is almost no chance of a team taking on Stamkos' contract. Now, Jeff, truthfully, I have not heard either of these interviews, so I cannot claim how accurate that paraphrasing or direct quote is. But as the Predators prepare to take on the Vancouver Canucks at 7 o'clock, I am legitimately worried about Steven Stamkos. And I was a little worried about Steven Stamkos when the Predators signed him last summer. If you heard our interview with Elliot, I agree wholeheartedly with Elliot that the 5-on-5 game might not be there anymore, but you can always count on him on the power play, and that hasn't been there. The power play is the worst in the NHL, 2-for-24, 8.3% entering this evening. So without that, Stamkos is going to have a hard time getting going. I thought it was interesting what Elliot said, Derek, about how he could foresee a situation, not immediately, but at some point, where Barry Trotz and Steven Stamkos sit down and talk about what's best for the player and what's best for the organization. I can't tell you what Steven Stamkos would fetch in a trade. The Predators would probably have to retain salary on that trade because he has an $8 million cap hit. It's too soon, I think, to discuss this in depth, but it is something that I have been wondering about to myself.
Well, I mean, that's what happens when you're not, you know, playing up to the level that many believe you should play, and your team isn't, you know, winning ball games or winning hockey games. If they get to a point in the season where, you know, it's not working and he still hasn't played any better and, you know, the season's sort of, you know, still teetering, would it be best to move him? It seems like he wouldn't. I'm not sure if he would. I mean, you guys have been following him longer than I have.
Mm-hmm.
Is he the type of player that would want out? I'm seeing he has a championship.
He's multiple
been paying,
championships.
Multiple championships. He's been paying money. He spent his career in Tampa.
Yes.
I don't see a guy like that unless he's going back to Tampa or unless he feels he can get back to Tampa somehow. I can't see him initiating a trade and say, you know what, I'm out of here. This team's bad. I'm leaving. Maybe the Preds may want to do that, and they come to him, and he says, you know what, okay. But I can't see him saying, I want out of here.
We'll see how the Predators do tonight against the Vancouver Canucks. Puck drop at 7. Pre-game coming up at the top of the hour with Max Herz. Game 2 of a 5-game homestand. The Predators lost the opening game of the homestand on Tuesday to the Anaheim Ducks. It wasn't pretty. A 5-2 loss to the Ducks. The Predators have lost 4 consecutive games, 3 in regulation, 1 in overtime. This is a critical homestand because, as we know in the NHL, you can dig yourself a hole early. The Predators did so last season. They started 0-5 and never recovered. And if the Predators continue to struggle, mm-hmm. there will continue to be conversations about Andrew Brunette. when we talked about this last year, Derek, the point I was making when I said after 25 games that the Predators should fire Ange Burnett, it was about the new coach bump, which is a thing in the NHL. Willie accused me of cherry picking, and I said, "Here's a decade's worth of data. Take that, Willie." And my hypothesis was proven correctly. So we'll see what happens. The Predators need to take advantage of a road-weary team tonight. The Canucks have been on the road. I believe this is the fifth and final game of a road trip for the Canucks. They're banged up, so we'll see how the Predators do against the Canucks. That's tonight at 7. Max Hurst will have pregame in just a matter of moments. Also, I didn't see this initially, so it's news to me. Mm-hmm. We've talked about College Game Day being at Vanderbilt on the Wyatt Lawn Saturday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central. Nate Bargatze will be the guest picker. There will also be live performances from Kenny Chesney and Dierks Bentley.
Okay.
So it's going to be a party at Vanderbilt for College Game Day. We'll talk more about the matchup tomorrow because we'll, of course, be right down the street at Party Foul in Midtown. We'll get more into the nuts and bolts of the Vanderbilt-Missouri matchup tomorrow. But I'm really interested in what the scene is going to be like at College Game Day on Saturday. David sent me a video of students practicing their field goal kicking for Pat McAfee's field goal kicking competition. Uh-huh. So we'll see if one of those students gets an opportunity to win some of Pat McAfee's money. I believe it's $100,000. It is his money. It's not ESPN's money, if I am not mistaken.
Okay.
So you can win $100,000 of Pat McAfee's money. He's got money to spare. He's got like 5 jobs, and I'm sure they all pay quite handsomely.
Okay, tomorrow.
Yes.
Tomorrow, Friday, we're going to spend the bulk of our time on Vandy.
Yes.
A lot of time.
We're going to talk a lot about Vandy.
I'm throwing down the flag on what I want from Vandy on game day.
Okay. Oh,
I'm going to lay it down tomorrow.
Okay.
I want everybody, just like I said, when they win, that goalpost needs to somehow, some way be in the Cumberland. They won. Somehow, some way, reach the Cumberland. I'm going to throw down something tomorrow.
Okay.
And I'm going to challenge.
You're going to challenge the students of Vanderbilt University.
Exactly. And they are for a challenge. I know they are.
Yes. They're smart kids.
Exactly.
They're smart kids.
Absolutely. So I got a challenge for them.
We also learned that Willie Donick is going to have VIP College Game Day access. Thanks to Max Herz. Thanks to Max Herz for hooking Willie Donick up with the VIP. What does that entail? Front row, right behind the desk?
Next to the fellas.
He gets to touch the dog.
Yeah, he gets to touch the dog.
He gets to pet Kirk Herbstreit's dog. That could be a VIP event. We might have a special College Game Day related guest on the show tomorrow.
Absolutely.
We might be graced with the presence of Desmond Howard, who, of course, is on the set on College Game Day. And no better time if Desmond Howard joins us than the weekend of Michigan versus Michigan State.
Absolutely.
I'm sure you two will behave yourselves.
Go green.
Go white. And when he comes on, you got to play the fight. I'm going to say it. You got to play the fight song. No Michigan fight songs on this radio station.
This is your turf.
Exactly.
This is your turf.
So when he's introduced, we're going to play that Spartan song.
As long as he doesn't hang up the phone. We kind of want him to stay on the line.
Stay.
Desmond Howard to stay on the line. So we hope to be joined by Desmond Howard of College Game Day tomorrow to help us break down Missouri and Vanderbilt. We'll be joined by Chad Withrow of Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on OutKick. We'll also take it to the bank, as we always do, to end the week. Derek, before we go, you started the show with a couple of conspiracy theories.
Yes.
Any more favorite conspiracy theories?
Some I can't say on air because I'd just get in trouble. by a lot of parents out there, so I can't really want to say. But I get in trouble with a lot of parents out there, even parents that I know, I would probably be in trouble. So I'm not going to say that one. But I'm sure there are some other conspiracies out there. I'm a huge conspiracy theorist. I love it. So, but I don't believe the Earth is flat. That I do not believe.
But
okay?
You neither confirmed nor denied that the moon landing was staged.
I am neither. You can convince me either way. I'm like, yeah, okay. If you okay. It's just, hey, like one texter said, did we forget how to get to the moon? Did we lose the technology to get to the moon?
I don't know.
That's what one texter said. I'm just saying, hey.
I know you're just saying. Hey, you're always just saying.
Hey, I'm just saying.
You're always just saying.
You'd be amazed. You would be amazed at how many people think like me when it comes to that.
Oh, I'm sure. That'll do it for us today. We will be live at Party Foul tomorrow in Midtown as Vanderbilt prepares to host College Game Day against Missouri. We hope to have Desmond Howard on the program. We will have Chad Withrow on the program. We'll continue to talk Titans as well as they prepare to take on the Colts. But Max Herz has Predators pregame coming up next.
Be loved, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful Thursday. I love you. The team love you. You hear that song. You hear that music, those words. Don't you forget about us because we will be back tomorrow at 3:00. Peace.